You should have seen the four of them. People worshipped them and cursed them, but everybody wanted to be them. Courtney was the leader.
All right, girls, out!
She was like Satan in heels, and Marcy was her henchman.
I don't think we've met what with the cruel politics of high school and all.
At a school like Reagan High, being the teen dream can be a little hard to swallow.
It is with deep dismay that I inform you that Elizabeth Kerr...
I heard she choked on a jawbreaker.
That is so cool.
Are you Courtney Alice Shane?
Maybe.
Now...
I'm Detective Vera Cruz.
One detective will try to find the face that fits the facts.
You ever seen one of these before?
No.
No?
Take a lot of licks to get one of these things down. It's hard.
You frighten me.
Welcome to I Totally Paused, the podcast that deep dives into the most iconic moments in teen pop culture from the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm Siobhan.
And I am Jess.
Today we are talking about Jawbreaker.
Yeah, just the two of us, like the old days.
Yeah, just the two, like the old days. Like the old days from 2 months ago. We actually haven't recorded in like a couple weeks.
No, we had a good backlog going. And then we have another episode with a really fun podcaster about an iconic movie in the works. But like, I forgot I had something to do on the day we were supposed to record. Like, we just haven't gotten our schedules together. Yeah. So we just said, you know, let's just do one ourselves just to get one.
Right.
Yes. Out there. And we decided that we were of the mind to watch the classic Jawbreaker.
I was obsessed with this movie. This one was not popular when it came out in 1999.
Yeah. Can I tell you when I was doing my research? Well, first of all, I told you, but I'll tell our listeners. I was telling Jared, my husband, that I had to like watch this for the podcast. And I was like, but it's like not for the kids. I have to watch it after the kids go to bed. And he had never heard of it. So I was explaining what it's about. And he goes, why don't you do a movie that people know? And I was like, people know this movie. Like,
no, it became a cult classic afterwards.
What are you talking about? But then when I was doing my research, the thing I was most shocked about was that people don't like this movie. It only has an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a travesty, in my opinion.
Because it's a cult classic, and cult classics are not realized in their time how great they are. But this is on its
way. It only had a 5 out of 10 on IMDb.
I know. I saw that too. I meant to rate it so I can bring that up a little bit.
It's
a 10 in my eyes. Yeah.
Did you notice that Google, if you Google it, it says that the genre is crime, which I thought was so funny.
Oh my God. I guess there is. Well, I do. What did I call it? It's in my notes later, but I think I do call it like SVU teen dream crime scene.
And I think that is the title of this episode.
I was hoping so when I wrote it.
Yeah, I thought that was so funny that they called it crime. Like, it's a dark comedy, sure. But like, when I think of crime, I think of like, you know, like gumshoe detectives like out there on the mean streets, which is not what this movie is.
Definitely not.
I read, though, that Darren Stein, who wrote it, originally like sat down to write a horror movie. Did you read that? Girls he knew used to kidnap each other on their birthdays, and he thought, like, what if it went wrong? And he thought that it would make a good horror movie, but as he started writing it, he realized that, like, it was, like, a dark comedy.
Yeah, and he also said that, like, the Jawbreaker came to represent the duality of the poppy sweetness of the girls of high school and of youth versus the whole idea that this thing could break your jaw.
Mm.
And apparently that was like, if you notice, there's a lot of circles in the movie, and it was like to bring back that Jawbreaker theme. Like, yeah, in Rebecca Gayheart's room, it's like she has all these circle motif going on in her room.
That's really great. Julie Taymor, who, if you guys don't know, is like a director. She directed like the film Across the Universe, but what she's really famous for is that she directed The Lion King on Broadway. And she has a really interesting TED Talk when she talks about directing for the stage, and she talks about how whenever she's getting ready to direct something, she tries to boil it down to like one image or like one shape, and how like for The Lion King, it's obviously the circle. It's the circle of life. So if you see the show, you see like, you know, the circle of Mufasa's mask and like all these like images of circles.
Jawbreaker and The Lion King, really not so different.
Yeah, hand in hand, really.
Yeah. Darren Stein brought the script to Columbia TriStar, who agreed to finance the film if he could cast either Natalie Portman, Kate Winslet, or Rose McGowan.
I think they made the right choice. Not that I don't love Kate Winslet and Natalie Portman, but I can't really see them in this movie.
I would love to see Kate Winslet in this, but no, Rose McGowan.
Would Kate Winslet have played Shane. The Rose McGowan role?
I just assumed they were all talking about that main role, but I guess, yeah, I guess Kate Winslet could have played Julie.
Yeah, yeah, Kate Winslet could have played Julie. Natalie Portman could have played Julie. Natalie Portman could have played Courtney.
Oh, but she could have been.
Natalie Portman could do anything.
Right, exactly.
Huh, that's interesting. They shot it in just 30 days. They made it for $3.5 million. It only grossed about $3 million.
It's so good that we're doing this during the summertime because this came out on video, not DVD, video, in the summertime. And me and my best friend Isaiah would watch this every single day. Mm-hmm. We were obsessed. Nobody else knew it and nobody else was into it.
This kind of movie was right up his alley. I was going to say, we need to shout out Isaiah. We were talking about him. Isaiah was a very dear friend of ours, very dear friend of mine, like a brother to Siobhan.
Right.
Passed away about 7 years ago.
Yeah. And his birthday's tomorrow.
And his birthday. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because we were like very nearly birthday buddies.
Yeah. When I realized, I got in the mood to watch it. And then when I realized, I'm like, oh, his birthday's this week, I was like, this is a little ode to good old Isaiah.
Yeah. So shout out Isaiah. Happy birthday. We miss you.
I know.
Love you. So it came out in 1999.
So yes. That was
probably the summer of 2000 that you and Isaiah were watching this.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, because it probably came out during the school year since it's like a high school movie. So I like they wanted to cast like older actresses like on purpose.
I read that. Yes.
Yeah. And then I feel like a really big shout out to the costume designer, Vicky Barrett. She drew on 1980s, 1950s era fashion trends blended with fetish elements like the lycra skirts. And they're all bright poppy color candied colors and everything.
The color palette is flawless. That's funny that she drew from like 50s and 80s because I felt when I was watching it like the fashion was like so 90s-tastic. But I guess the 90s
really?
Drew a lot.
No, it's very 50s inspired with like the pencil skirts and the tight sweaters. Like that's very old. And they had the stockings with the lines going down the middle of their calves.
You know what I kept looking at that I kept just being like, 90s? What's your name? She calls herself Foxy.
Marcy.
Her hairstyles. She had like super 90s-tastic hair throughout the movie with her like little mini pigtails and just her whole look.
Vicky Barrett, she falls into this because she worked on Romy Michelle, Clueless, and The Wedding Singer. So she worked on some classics. But this is like when she was the head designer. Okay, so let's move into the movie. It starts off with Fern Mayo narrating.
Yes, and we dive right in with a scene that we would later see, I believe, get an homage in Mean Girls when we see the four girls like strutting down the hallway.
Mean Girls is totally paying homage to this moment. Mm. It's so great. Yeah, it totally is.
Just like
where
Mean
else
Girls, we see them like round the corner and strut down the hallway.
And she's just saying that they're the beautiful ones, the flawless four.
She says, you know them. They went to your school too. And I was thinking, I don't think they did.
No, I was going to say, it's like, do you remember anyone walking down the hallways like this?
No. Obviously, like, I was listening to, shout out Feathers in My Hair. I was listening to Feathers in My Hair the other day, and friend of the pod, Liz Bentley, was saying something similar. She was talking about, like, the girls, the teen moms who she thinks were, like, popular girls at their high schools, and she was saying that her high school didn't really have popular kids, and I was thinking, like, I believe it. Princess was on too, and Princess Jones Curtis was saying she didn't believe that. And I do believe it because the high school I used to teach at was like that. I thought about it frequently, actually, that like there didn't really seem to be like popular kids.
Oh, okay. Like there wasn't.
At our high school, I feel like there were popular kids, but there was nobody that people like feared.
Oh, no, not at all. And I feel like there was like a pretty expansive group of people that were like popular. Yes. I feel like it kind of went off and like spidered.
Right. I feel like even if you weren't in the popular group, it was just because those people didn't happen to be your friends, not because they were like mean and like excluding you the way that.
Right. Like, I don't think there was ever like, because movies always like to make it seem like there's like one main girl, one main guy, and then like everybody else, it kind of revolves around them.
Like in, we talked about it, Never Been Kissed. What did they say? They tell Josie like people spent all 4 years trying to transition or whatever they call
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Transition.
Over yourself, Jessica Alba. Oh my goodness.
God.
So Fermeo says they went to our school too, but I say no, Fermeo. They did not go to my school. I realized upon this viewing, and I have seen this movie like 100 times, For Mayo, I don't think I ever really thought before about what a creep she is from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. I get into this later. But yes, she is totally...
She talks about Liz Purr and she says, I used to dream about what it would be like to be her. Like,
she was perfect. I used to dream about what it would be like to be her. Elizabeth Purr.
Fern, just live your life.
Right, because she goes down and she kind of like talks about each girl and she says Courtney's the leader, Satan in heels, Marcy is a legend in her own mind, known to herself as Foxy, which you can't give yourself a nickname, Marcy. That's like not, you're not allowed to do that. It's just not done, okay? And Julie is doomed to be popular because of that face and because
which
she is
true. She's so pretty.
Oh, she's so beautiful. And because she's friends with Liz Purr, who is rich, smart, and sweet.
Yes, and if Courtney ruled with fear, Liz ruled with kindness.
Yeah, like she said, Liz Di was the princess. Oh, no, Liz was the Princess Di of Reagan High. But yeah, that's a little bit of a Freudian flip.
Courtney ruled with terror, but Liz ruled with kindness. She was like the Princess Di of Reagan High, and that pissed Courtney off.
Yeah, Liz is like beautiful and she's popular, but she's like, she's very sweet. And we see Fern drop her books in the hallway and Liz is the only one who stops and like helps her pick them up, which Fern like sadly will later tell us is the nicest thing anyone's ever done for her.
I know. She's had a very tough, shitty life.
Okay. So we open up on
Liz Purr's house, right?
On her birthday.
It's a big, beautiful house. And there's like a bunch of like newspapers like outside.
Right.
Oh yeah, totally. Cause she's like, they say she's like the rich one in school. Yeah.
So she lives in this mansion, similar to Regina George's house, actually. And they have this tradition, we find out, where on their friends' birthdays, they kidnap each other. Which, like, cool, that's cute, that's fine. But the way that, like, the extent to which they take this tradition is absolutely out of control. Like,
it's criminal before even...
They tie her up, and if they're wearing masks, right? So she's probably, like, legit terrified. And as if all of that is not bad enough, they throw her in the trunk of the car.
Exactly.
That's why I feel like the line was crossed.
Well, that's what I mean. It's criminal before even someone dies. Like, yes. They're already like breaking way too many rules. And like, this poor girl.
The car, they drive. They say they're going to like stuff her pretty little face with pancakes. So they're like driving to take her for like birthday breakfast or whatever. But then they get out of the car to let her out and they stand around like.
Oh, wait, but before, as they're like driving through, like Marcy. He goes, Liz is gonna die. Like, I loved all these. And then Courtney's like, I wish my friends would do this for her. And Julie's like, you would have us killed. She goes, only maimed, my dear. So there's already like a lot of like this dark talk.
A lot of heavy foreshadowing. And then they stand around at the trunk, chit-chatting. They're in no particular hurry. Like, she's not probably suffocating in there.
Well, because they're dumb. They didn't think anything would happen with the jaw. Well, no, they didn't know, but they didn't think anything would happen with the jawbreaker in her mouth. So, of course, they're just, oh, whatever. They're just thinking of themselves. Typical.
They open the trunk.
One is for witch. Two is for bitch. Pop it, Marcy!
Surprise! Oh, my God. What happened to her? What's in her throat?
Courtney?
And, of course, Liz is dead. And Courtney's got the Polaroid camera because she's going to like snap a picture of Liz, like, you know, Liz's shocked face. She snaps a picture. Liz is in there and she is dead. We hear Marcy go, what's in her throat? And she has choked on the jawbreaker. And I was saying in my notes, I really appreciate how this movie gets right into it. We're like 3 minutes into the movie.
Oh, and yeah. They waste no time. Yeah. Heather's, which is, this is kind of makes like a little nod to this whole thing with the queen bee dying. Heather's, you see Heather alive for a good like 15 minutes of that movie before she actually gets killed.
Yeah. This movie gets right into it. Actually, when this happens, I believe some of the credits are still rolling because this is where I made a note. Where I noticed that I had forgotten that Marilyn Manson is in this movie.
Right.
And, you know, it was like the height of edginess in 1999.
I know. It is such a dark comedy with the way, because Courtney's like, I thought a jawbreaker would be funny. You gagged her with a jawbreaker? Opening credits. Yeah. Like, they're already, like, making light.
Oh, God, Liz!
I thought a jawbreaker would be funny.
You gagged her with a jawbreaker?
Leave me lying here.
And this is such a 90s-tastic soundtrack that all these, like, self-proclaimed 90s kids, they need to know about it.
Yeah.
Learn it, live it, love it, as the girls would say. Yes.
So Courtney decides that she's going to call Liz out of school, and she pulls out her red, like, brick, like, Nokia cell phone, which I...
Yes.
Julie wants to tell. Julie is the one who's, like, the nice one, right, who was, like, best
friend. Right from the beginning, she wants to do the right thing, and just, it was an accident, which it truly was. Like, there's no of this going back and saying, like, Courtney wanted it to happen. Like, there isn't any of that in the movie. Like, it truly is, like, Courtney is shocked that this happened and, like, was not expecting it. I mean, she's very cavalier afterwards and doesn't care very much with this whole scene in the car. Courtney is cool, calm, collected. Mm-hmm. She's, like, trying to stay in control as possible. Mm-hmm.
But they, like, convince Julie she's not going to tell someone. So Courtney tells them, you know, they call Liz out of school, and she says, you are going to go to school, and you were going to strut your shit down that hallway. Like, nothing happened.
Now, okay, so when Courtney calls and imitates Miss Purr, and then Marcy's like, that was really good. And Courtney kind of, like, stops, is like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, the way Liz's mom, you, like, you know, imitated her, I'm just saying you're in control. She's like, oh, yeah, I know. That was like, why was she so taken aback by that? Do you remember that scene?
Yeah, I do remember that scene. I don't know. That's a weird moment.
Yeah, because I never understood why she was like, kind of like, what? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
So we see them like strutting down the hallway. And this is actually what I said. This 90s fashion is like too much for me. And girls do not dress up like that for high school. In the 90s, did people actually do that? We'll have to ask Bridget. Was that like a thing that girls got super dressed up for school? Do you recall?
I remember when Tara was in high school, she would like, you know, people kind of do get like a little dressed up. It's not just like bummed clothes. And like, I definitely remember dressing up in high school, wanting to look cute.
I feel like I dressed like in put together outfits, but these girls come in with like, you know, the mini skirts and the tops and the heels and the hair.
I wouldn't say I would have that outfit like all the time, but I definitely had some of those outfits that I would like pull out of my repertoire. In my closet. And so that iconic Yoohoo song plays as they're like strutting down the hallway.
We see them in the bathroom like being mean to people as popular girls are in movies.
She demands everyone leave the bathroom immediately. And they all do. They all comply away.
Mm-hmm. And she says it's beauty time. They have to do their pre-lunch touch-ups.
I love that. Okay, she's like, what would we usually do? Pre-lunch touch-ups?
We're talking about how they're going to go through their day like normal. What would we normally be doing by now?
Yeah, I want to talk about the fashion just a little bit more because I wrote down some things. Because I said I loved how they rocked the pencil skirts when that sort of thing was not cool at the time. Like, I remember specifically that's why, like, this came out at me because, you know me, like, I love 50s and 40s stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that, like, being done, I was like, I love that. That, like, speaks to me. I felt like it was just so out of trend that it was, like, I remember being, like, refreshing to see it.
I know that for sure I noticed more of that later on when we see Fern Mayo, like, transform a lot of Violet wears.
There's a lot of color blocking, like a lot of color on color. Rose is wearing the hot red sweater with a red pencil skirt. There's a lot of pink on pink with Violet when she like goes on later on, which I think they also say like Liz was always wearing pink too. So it's like kind of interesting.
Right.
Like Violet takes on to the pink.
Right, like taking her place, right.
Yeah. And Marcy had like a neon green halter with a plaid pencil skirt. And I remember like Julie had, I didn't even write down what she wrote because actually it was my least favorite outfit.
Okay.
It didn't adhere to the motif, I felt like, as much as the other one did. I felt like she had a shorter skirt.
Oh, she does wear cute little sweater sets, though, later that are kind of...
Yeah, once she, like, leaves the group, she kind of, like, goes into more modern-looking clothes, too.
They're still in the bathroom, and their teacher, Miss Sherwood, comes in and tells them that, like, somebody needs to come get Liz's work.
Yeah.
And bring it home.
Smoking? Toking?
She goes, please make it by 3. I have a pet to groom. And then before she leaves, she turns back to them and she goes, please cover your bosoms. This is a learning institution, not a brothel.
Yes. And she's like, be nice, girls. Courtney says, if I have to be friends with every Pam, Beth, and Sherry just because they're nice, I'd have Noah's fucking Ark in my phone book.
Which made me laugh because phone book.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Phone book. Now the contacts.
On her Snap or whatever. We've talked before about how in these movies, the lessons that they're having in class always seem to like parallel whatever the problem is that they're having.
It's my favorite teen movie trope.
Yes. And in this movie, we get a full-on montage of it. They're learning about like murder in a Shakespeare play in English class.
They're doing Macbeth. Yeah.
They're talking about an autopsy in some other class.
And how women were put to death to study them. So it's all like about homicide.
In cooking class, Marcy cracks an egg and it's bloody inside. And we see this like goth girl who we'll see like a few times over the course of the movie. And she goes, cool, you got a stillborn, which I was I don't know if you would say that in a movie now. That's
yeah, and she has these really long nails and she puts her nails in it. Oh, it's so gross. I feel like
their cooking teacher was probably really fun though.
She had
a little attitude.
That's great. So then their girls are on the bleachers and they're trying to figure out like Liz's death story. And Courtney and now even Marcy are becoming like very cavalier about the situation. Yes. Julie, she's all
Marcy is very much like the Gretchen Wiener. She's very much, and they're going to address this later. If Courtney's the queen bee, she's very much like the wannabe, the follower.
Oh, you're right. Yes, very much so. And so Courtney comes up with Liz sucking on a jawbreaker while watching TV in bed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how we all do.
Yeah.
Marcy's like, oh, she could have been practicing. I was like, Marcy.
On a jawbreaker?
It's like, Marcy, your friend just died. It's kind of right. also you're making, your fault like, a little bit. And you're
crass sex jokes, yeah.
And so that gives Courtney the idea that Liz has the secret, like, sex addiction. And she, like, is into kink. And she invites a guy over. And it goes a little too far. And the screams were muffled by the huge candy ball. And it was nothing but sugary sweet death.
Sugary sweet death.
Wait a minute. What? Rape. They'll check to see if she was raped, right? Maybe Liz had a friend over. You know, mommy and daddy's last night away. Maybe he's from school, maybe not. But definitely into kink. He got a little rough, went a little too far. You know, there's a fine line between pleasure and pain. She screamed for help, but nobody could hear her. Her screams were muffled by the huge candy ball. She tried, but there was nothing, only sugary, sweet death.
Holy moly.
And
in the midst of this, they realize they forgot to go get Liz's homework. So now we need to be worried because somebody else might be going to her house with it. And one of the girls says, what if Miss Sherwood took it? And Courtney goes, we kill her.
I know.
JK, JK. Is Miss Sherwood, I don't know that actress's name, but she's
Carol Kane
on Kimmy Schmidt, right?
Yeah, oh my god, that's right. Yeah. She is on Kimmy Schmidt. Carol Kane. She's in like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she's really funny on Kimmy Schmidt. I recognized her like her funny voice. So we cut to a scene of Miss Sherwood and she's with Fern Mayo asking Fern if she knows Liz and if she will bring Liz her homework. And she goes, do you know a senior named Liz Elizabeth Purr? And Fern Mayo goes, you mean meow?
Ugh. Yeah. Well, Liz is the cat
creep.
Ugh. Yeah. And Miss Sherwood's like, what? She goes, Liz is the cat's meow.
She looks and so creepy about it. She's like moaning.
This is where it would be accurate for Regina George to be like, why are you so in love with me? Like, why are you so obsessed with me? This would be like the accurate like way to apply. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So she like leaves with the books. She says it would be like an honor to go and like take her the work or whatever. And when she leaves, Miss Sherwood goes, I didn't give her the address. Said, of course Fern knows where she lives. She's a fucking stalker.
I know. And it's like, Miss Sherwood, Fern is like obviously not right and like not, she's like an unstable stalker. You really shouldn't have been giving her those books.
No. And then we see her outside Liz's house and she like takes her retainer out and she's like rehearsing how she's going to like say hello to Liz when she goes in there.
The first time we ever heard the words, my name's Fern Mayo, like hold the mayo, Isaiah and I laughed. For like 20 minutes, and probably for like the next 20 minutes, laughed and rewound that scene like 50 times. Because
I noted to myself that if Fern had better self-esteem, it would have been Fern Mayo, like extra mayo.
Oh, yes. I love that. But it's like, you're introducing yourself to the coolest girl in school, and that's what
you're going to say.
So bad.
Like, hold the mayo.
Oh my god. But meanwhile,
had Liz been sick and alive in that bedroom, what would have happened would have been that she would have gone in. She would have dropped the work with like Liz's mom. She probably never would have seen Liz, or Liz's parents aren't there. So she would have like handed it to her and Liz would have been like, okay, thanks. And,
like, yeah, bye.
Left. This was not going to be the beginning of like a beautiful friendship.
See ya. So Courtney chases down Miss Sherwood and she finds out that Fern is on her way to Liz's house. And she goes, you mean mayonnaise? Liz hates her. So that's why I was like, was Liz that sweet? Did she really hate Fern Mayo?
No, I don't think so. I don't like to think so. I think that they just, you know, they don't like her. So
I think so too. No. Right. I think that's just like they don't like her. Yeah. Because if they don't like one person, they all can't like that person.
Right.
Tell me. Oh, I have a new theory at this point.
She's the Gretchen. In the Mean Girls musical, Gretchen has this really great song called What's Wrong With Me. Mm-hmm. And it's where she's like thinking about like her friendship with Regina. And it's all about how, you know, how like desperate she is for Regina's. It almost like you hear it like a love song. It's about like how desperate she is.
Oh, okay.
And one of the lines is, tell me who we hate today and I will fall in line.
Actually, some of the demos are for this musical because they did a Jawbreaker musical several years ago. It was off Broadway. They had some of the demos on YouTube and they were actually pretty cool. I like them.
I'll have to look for those.
Yeah, there was just like two or three.
Yeah.
They're worth looking into.
So they decide they're going to like run ahead to Liz's house and they're going to try to
make it look like
set up the body. Yeah. Make it look, you know, like an accident. We see more shots of Liz's house and this is where I start to wonder what Liz's parents do for a living. Because that house is just bananas. It's just insane.
It is a nice house. I didn't really give that much thought to it. There's so much craziness going around us in the movie.
It's not like a normal nice suburban house. It's like a legit mansion. It's like a crazy house. So anyway, they are like setting up the body. As they're like doing it, Julie finds a card from the last year's like prank and she opens it and it's got Liz's voice recorded in it. It's like one of those cards where like you open it and it makes a sound and they hear Liz going, "What are you doing to me?"
Which she should have already learned like last year. I wonder what they did to her last year. And the other girls are very like down to business. They have like plastic gloves on as they're like trying to position her. Marcy's like,
no more. No reaction to the fact that they're dealing with their best friend's dead body.
Oh no, it's all business.
Like, cool,
it's all
business.
Yeah, Julie isn't really doing that. That's what, like, she's kind of just looking through things. She's still in shock, you know.
So meanwhile, they're, like, talking about, like, what they're going to do, and we see Fern, like, coming up the stairs, and Fern is starting to, like, be able to, like, hear some of the things that they're talking about.
And she hears Marcy scream, and so she decides to go around to the back of the house, which I'm like, what? Like, what are you doing, Fern? Like,
right. You just can't, Fern, like... We've established Fern is a serious creep. She goes inside, and she hears Courtney say, "I killed Liz. I killed the teen dream. Deal with it."
The iconic line.
Mm-hmm. Remember that one, folks. That's coming back for you later in the movie.
Yeah, she hears everything, and the girls open the door, and they find Fern just staring back at them, completely shocked.
Mm-hmm. And Courtney, like, very calmly is like, "You need to tell us what you heard. We're not going to hurt you."
Well, first she introduces herself and she goes, I don't think we've met with the crude politics of high school and all. This is a really good script. I really wish Daniel Stein had like done more movies. Yeah. Should have been given a chance.
They like tell her. They're like, "You heard it. You know." They don't like beat around the bush.
Yeah, but like Courtney is still acting like super calm and nice. Like she's trying to like.
They chase her out. They like sit her down. And they.
I love how when she ran out, she goes, "Marcy, get her." Like Marcy's like her henchman. So Courtney tells Fern that she has like the truth and that gives you power, the power to tell. And you're the kind of girl who tells.
Yes,
a tattletale.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, "You're nothing. We're everything. You're the shadow. We're the sun." And she's like so like does these like flourishes with her hand. Yeah, she's very theatrical about it. And so she offers her to basically for her silence, make her popular. Give her a makeover and make her one of them.
"You're nothing. We're everything. You're the shadow. We're the sun. But I'm here to offer you something you never dared dream of. Something that you were never meant to be, but will be. Because today, Fern, my dear, fate has decided that you are cool."
She says, "Liz is gone, Fern. Take her place." Which is literally all Fern has ever wanted out of her life.
Right. It's the only thing the girls can really offer her that will keep her quiet. Like, she wouldn't want anything else but that. And Julie tells her, "You don't own someone by making them beautiful, and you can't hide the truth by a makeover."
But can't you, Julie? Maybe for a little while you can. So then
the makeover montage is very dark.
The darkest makeover montage in movie history.
It's cut with images of...
This makeover montage is a lot.
It's cut with images of Liz having her autopsy done.
Yes. It's this weird mashup of like Liz's body being prepared and then also Fern getting this makeover.
And it's in this weird, like, bordello, like, type of place with the
it
girls.
It reminds me of that spa in Zoolander. You know when in Zoolander he goes to that weird, where he gets, like, his skin treatments or whatever, and then, what's her name, the reporter goes there too.
You know what? I don't remember that part.
I remember the details. But
now I'm thinking of the spa in Death Becomes Her, though, and it kind of reminds me of that, too.
We need to do that movie soon.
I would another movie love
that Isaiah. So then we see them like debut Fern at school, and for some reason they've decided to give her a soccer mom haircut.
Yeah, that like, always that really bothered me.
Place? They made her like hot, but she still has this like one like weird.
Well, they can't make her hotter than them. They got to have her still down a peg, as I like to say, bring someone exactly. down a peg.
They debut her in school, like everyone's looking at her.
And Julie is noticeably absent from the lineup this time around as they're going down the hallway.
Julie, like, confronts them and is saying, like, we have to come clean. We have to go to the police. And Courtney says to her, we saw you. We all know you did it. Basically letting her know, like, we're all going to lie. And we're all together if you go to the police. Julie's, like, screwed right now.
Pretty much.
We see them at lunch, and there's this, like, really funny moment where Courtney, Fern takes out her, like, brown paper bag lunch to eat. And Fern tells her that they never, ever eat during lunch. And if they did, it wouldn't be out of a paper bag. And then she goes on to explain why they don't eat at lunch. And basically because, like, eating...
Food's cool and all. Like, tastes good and you need it to live.
But it, like, makes people think of, like, bodily functions.
Digestion, flatulation, defecation, even, shall we say, complexion, defection.
And Marcy, like, gasps, stunned. So while they're eating at lunch, Courtney decides she's going to give Fern a new name. And she calls her Violette. For the first time. She says Fern is a plant, right? But Violette is a flower. And she thought, you know, rose is too boring. And she says, never send a rose unless dyed black as a warning.
And it's kind of funny because her real name is Rose. Ha 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 ha.
So
and you destroy it along with the sender. Emotionally, of course. It's not like we kill people.
On purpose.
So Liz's parents come home and they find the SVU teenage dream crime scene.
Yeah.
And so it's only a matter of time before the whole school finds out.
Right. So they come in to tell the teacher and she's smoking in her office, which I loved.
Oh yeah. Cause she was like admonishing them for like maybe smoking in the bathroom before.
Oh, and in this scene, so we see Julie waiting for the bus. And actually here, I did say, I feel like Julie's look here is like 90s, 50s chic. So I did clock that at one point.
Oh, there you go.
Her little hair flip and her cardigan and her sunnies. And this guy, Zach, pulls up. And he's like, what's a girl like you doing waiting for the bus? And
he offers her a ride. His car
is hot. Oh, I Googled that after. I was like, whatever happened to him? He's hot. He didn't really do anything else. He was in
the- I know. I looked him up too. Yeah. And he was a cutie. I like that him and Julie looked really good together, too.
Yes. They and we're going to find out later couple. That he's a feeder guy. And I can tell you guys from experience, if there is a hot straight, if there's a straight, decent-looking guy in theater, like, he doesn't even have to be that hot. You, like, can convince yourself he is. Because
oh, I bet.
Like, seeing a lot of other straight guys.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of options out there.
So we see Fern at home and her phone rings and she looks at it like she thinks it might be haunted or something.
That always made me laugh too. Like she was so shook that it actually rang because you know that poor girl, her phone never rang. Like she couldn't believe it.
So it turns out it's Julie. Julie has been like sitting on her bed looking through like pictures and things. And this is where we find out that Julie and Fern.
Oh, wait, you missed this.
What?
90s moment. Julie, to find the number, calls 411 on her cordless phone. To get the Mayo residence.
Yes. I remember that. And I didn't even think to make a note of it, but that's what you used to have to do.
I really always liked how Julie's bedroom was decorated because it's so color coordinated. It's like oranges and blues. And there's that circle motif that they like kept trying to bring back.
So they talk and we find out they used to be friends. Like Julie talks about how they had sleepovers in fourth grade and they kind of grew apart.
It's kind of like a Mean Girls thing too with Regina and what's her face? Janice. Like how they were friends.
Yes. And Julie says it's weird or it's sad or something, how time erases things. And Fern says time doesn't erase things. People erase things.
I know. Oh. And she's like, tells Fern that she's really scared. And I was like, Julie must feel so alone because obviously Liz was like her only real friend in that group.
Mm-hmm. She says it later to Zach. She said something like, you know, it was just bullshit with the rest of them. I only really cared about Liz.
And so there is like a call waiting thing comes on. So like Fern's having quite the night. Not just one person called her, two. And it's Courtney. And she's like trimming her toenails. And she's like, never answer after one ring. What are you thinking, Violet? And she's like, I don't care if your little sister locks herself in the freezer. Courtney Shane is priority number one.
So we find out Courtney is getting ready to hang out with this guy, Dane. And I
died, because we open in the scene on Dane lying on Courtney's bed, and he's like trying all these different positions to be
he's
in.
He's like the hot football guy at school.
Yes. And he's like trying all his like different sexy positions. And I died because Siobhan and I used to have a boy roommate. His name was Josh. Shout out Josh if you happen to listen to this. Can you imagine Josh listening to this?
He's like, I miss Never. Him so oh my much. God. I need having, to listen like, to their voices.
Flashbacks from living with us. But Josh used to, we lived with Josh when we were like 22, 23, and Josh was like 26, 27. So bless his heart. He dealt with like a lot from us, yeah. But I have very clear memories of Josh being like, Jess, I'm bringing a girl back later for sex. What do you think is like my sexiest position? And he would make me like watch him try all these positions.
It's nice to know that guys think about that too.
Oh, they do.
Josh wasn't like a normal guy, but.
No, he wasn't. Josh, no. One of my favorite Josh quotes, just to give you an idea of what we were working with. I was, now, keep in mind, when I was 22, I was really, really thin. And I remember one night putting on like something and being like, do I look fat in this? Fully expecting Josh to be like, no. And Josh looked me up and down and went, why don't you just do some obliques before you go out? Fuck you.
Completely serious too. Like he was like, no. Yeah.
Thank you, Josh. I'm going to go purge my dinner now. He was the worst, but he was great. We loved him. So anyway, he totally did this. It's a real thing. And for some reason, like, I felt like her hair looked really greasy in this scene. She looked like dirty.
It was like all up and everything. Like it was different than normally is. It was like is.
Not a great look, I felt, with this popsicle. And she like basically makes him like deep throat the popsicle.
I didn't think this was a bad move. If like guy you like is like into kinkiness and you're like, here's the popsicle. Show me what you want done. Like, I actually didn't think that was so bad.
Into it though. Like, I felt like she was like forcing him because he's kind of like, Courtney, this is fucked up. And she's like, I told him I wanted a little.
He seemed to be really into it when she started going down on him. Well, so
yeah, of course. Why wouldn't he? Sure.
Yeah. But I don't know. Courtney Shane.
Of course.
Props to you, because I thought that was a pretty good move.
When she walks away, we see that she has a tattoo on her shoulder, which is apparently a tattoo that Rose McGowan actually has of herself.
I know. I read that too. I love that.
Okay.
Rose McGowan. And they were going to try to like cover it up, but they decided it was like going to be too expensive, too time consuming. And they figured it would go with like Courtney's like bad girl image to have like a tattoo.
So then we see, she kind of like leaves Dane hanging, and then we see Marcy at home with her dad, who is Kanicki.
I know, Kanicki so from Greece. Exciting. And he's admonishing her for using
Dane, because I just kept thinking, a hickey from Kanicki is like a Hallmark card.
Yeah, and it's like, he's like a very proper father who's like admonishing her for using bad language and talking about Oprah episodes he watched on parenting.
Yes, he's talking about how Oprah had an episode called Is My Child a Follower? Yes, Oprah, my child is a follower. And she, you know, she's like, Dad, he goes, you remember the Tiffany concert? I think we're alone now. And she
doesn't seem to be anyone around.
Like my nightmare of my daughter's future. My literal nightmare.
I know. It's so hard to watch this now, though, because you didn't watch this, but he was on Celebrity Rehab. And
oh, yeah. He's dead, isn't he?
He is dead now. Oh. And it was so sad because he was, like, really heavily, like, addicted.
Oh, I forgot that he died.
Like, yeah. He was really addicted to painkillers. He had this girlfriend who was obviously also probably an addict and was just, like, using him. And, like, it was just sad. Sad situation. But rest in peace, Kanicki.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah. So is all this the very next day?
It seems like it.
Doesn't it seem like she became, like, Violet became a person, like, a whole new person, and all this happened in just, like, one day?
Like, little scene of Julie standing by Liz's pool, and Liz's mom, like, runs out and hugs her, and it's really sad.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, like, another moment where we realize that, like, this, like, Julie actually, like, cared about Liz. This is, like, a big deal for her. Then we get this weird montage of kids eating Jawbreakers on a merry-go-round.
When they're talking to the detective, when Vera Cruz, played by Pam Grier, Foxy Brown, the original Foxy. So she's the detective, and so she's interviewing the girls. And Courtney is starting to kind of plant the seed that Liz isn't who she says she is. But Vera Cruz is like kind of beating around the bush. And finally, she's like, who is she fucking?
Yeah.
And she brings out the Jawbreaker, and she takes a big lick out of it, and she slams it on the table. Yeah, she's talking about like Jawbreakers, and there's the kids on the playground. She's like, it's a pretty fucked up name for a candy, don't you think? She goes, it will break your jaw. Mm-hmm.
So then they get ready to announce. They're announcing Liz's death at school. And we see everyone
like it's the death of the president.
Right. Everyone's like frozen in tableau while they like make the announcement.
Julie's walking down while everyone else is frozen.
Yeah. At this point, I realize it makes no sense to me that nobody has mentioned that Fern Mayo has been absent for days, and they do not wonder where this, like, none of the adults wonder, like, who Violet is and why she isn't on any of their class rosters.
And then, like, you learn that she's, like, already head cheerleader. She gets to be, like, the head of the school play,
no
like, the
record
lead.
Of her. No teachers are asking questions about what, like, the teachers can't tell that's Fern Mayo.
Well, from what we learned from Never Been Kissed, if that means anything, it's pretty, yeah, people don't pay attention easy. To enrolling, you know? You could just walk in and say, hi, I'm in your class now. My name is Joey McJoerson.
Cool. We see Fern in school, and I love a 90s slip dress. And Fern is wearing this like amazing hot pink slip dress that like, frankly, I want one. It's like an amazing shade of pink. It looks so good on her. They have like noticed now that Julie has been hanging out with Zach. Courtney tells Violet that she like needs a guy and that she's going to go after Zach, the drama guy. And they're looking at the poster for the school play, which has his picture on it. Like, he's, like,
a superstar. I know, like, a superstar.
Reminded me of, in Hairspray, you know how I always say in Hairspray, I'm so confused by how they treat, Link, like, he's a celebrity, because, like, he goes to their school.
But he's on TV.
But he goes to their school.
But he's on TV.
I don't know, my niece goes to school with the kid from Stranger Things, and she doesn't talk about him like he's a celebrity.
Well, because I'm sure she's cool, so, like, you know what I mean?
And that's where the school plays at his school, Gaten Matarazzo.
Oh my God, he's my favorite one too.
Yeah, he's adorable. He's from Jared's hometown and he goes to high school there.
Maybe he'll do the podcast.
Or Anne-Marie saw him at Walmart not long ago. Maybe.
Oh my God, I'd die. I love that he's like in New Jersey.
And he does the plays and he never has the lead, which I always think is nice.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's doing pretty well for himself. Yeah, you know.
He doesn't need it. And I think it's nice that they don't try to like.
I wonder how much money that kid makes.
Trot him out. Well, he's got those Verizon commercials now too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And he's got a show. He's got his own show coming out on Netflix.
Good for him. Oh my God, he's like my favorite one. I think he's so cute. Oh, I said Fern was wearing a great outfit during this scene. It's like a pink, shiny, strapless top with a pink satin pencil skirt. There's a lot of pencil skirts in this movie, and I love it.
Yeah, because Fern somehow had time to like go out and get a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah, and I love how Courtney just like decides she should be dating Zach. Which yep, obviously like, we know it's because Julie, but I feel like she'd be doing that anyway, like deciding who she was dating.
Yes, for sure. We see Zach and Julie on like a little date. Like he takes her to an abandoned drive-in and it's like kind of romantic. It's sweet.
Oh my God, I would love if a boy took me to that.
I noted around this time that Fern has the perfect neck for a neck scarf. She rocks a lot of neck scarves and scarves.
She does have like a long neck and...
Yeah, I feel like they...
You know who Fern is. Well, one of her many roles.
She was on Arrested Development, right?
Yeah, she was Kitty on Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. She actually wrote a book, and it's a play on, like, kind of like, you know me from something. Like, it's like a play on that. Oh, yeah, she wrote a book once. Judy Greer. She's great.
So then we see her getting interviewed by the detective, and she's so creepy. She talks about how, like, she used to sit behind Liz in class and how she would, like, look for patterns in the cluster of beauty marks on the back of Liz's neck. And she goes, I know it sounds weird. Yeah, it does. Really fucking weird.
Yeah, because she would talk about how, like, when the bell rang, it'd be like, oh, it'd be time for the next class. And my head would just be filled with, like, the images I made up of, like, what was, like, on her, the back
and
of her neck.
That, like, Cruz sees how creepy she is. She sees through it. Nightmare sequence. We can see that, like, the stress is starting to wear on Fern. She has, like, images of Liz's body and this, like, centipede on a rose at Liz's house. Oh, and, yes. Like, she just, like, she's breaking down a little bit.
Then we see Courtney use a payphone to call the detective. Mm-hmm. And she tells her about Liz being like a risk taker and a craving for strange men that nobody else knew about except Courtney. She was the only one.
Isn't this kind of what happens in Twin Peaks?
I actually have never seen it, but Bridget was just talking about that.
All right. So I watched like a couple episodes of it and it was like, okay, but I just could not invest the time into the whole thing, but I wanted to know.
Bridget watched that when she was in middle school.
Really?
We were talking about it this weekend. She was like, I realized I was in eighth grade when that was on. I'm like, the whole thing probably went over your head. She's like, yeah, but I loved it.
Super dark. But I like Googled it because I wanted to know like what happened.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure the thing was that the girl who was like the teen dream, the one who gets murdered, it turns out that she was like sleeping with strange men, like adult men.
Oh.
And that was like part
if
of the
they took thing. That from Twin Peaks. I would love that.
I think they may have. Yeah. So she's like describing a story and there's just this gross image of Liz like walking into a bar with all these like gross middle-aged businessmen that just like made me want to rip my skin off.
Yeah. And like the one guy that she picks is looking at her like, yeah. Like, and he has like a
disgusting mustache. It's Marilyn Manson.
Right. Yes. Who at the time was dating Rose McGowan.
Yes. And then we have a sex scene between the two of them. And I said, so I watched this early in the morning when my whole family was like still asleep. I made coffee and watched this movie. And I said,
what a way to start the day.
A sex scene between Rose McGowan and Marilyn Manson is just more than I need at this hour of the morning. Like it was.
Yeah. With a dead corpse below it. Because she like moves the. Yeah. So what she does, Courtney has sex with him in Liz's bed and Liz's body hid it during that to make it look like, which I was like, wait, how accurate is this? Because he's not like, it's not like he's having sex with Liz. There's like a lot of holes in this because one, he didn't have sex with Liz. So unless like.
Because did she then like plant semen like
right,
on the body?
That was my thing. Yeah. And then also. We learn later, Julie says Liz was a virgin. So when they have the autopsy, right? Yeah, that's.
He was using like tampons or whatever, I guess. Maybe not, but.
Really? Is that thing like tampons really do break your hymen?
I think so.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I don't know.
we're only women.
No, I think so. I think they do. That makes sense. Really? That they would, right? You put them like all the way in. I don't know. Let us know.
You can get if us you're a doctor or just a normal woman, a normal adult woman, can you let us know? Can you educate us, please, on our bodies?
So we're back in school and everyone's talking. It's all about Violette. Like suddenly everyone is talking about her. She's like all the buzz.
Yeah. The drama kid, she's doing the Madonna thing. I hear she toured with Madonna. She's doing the bi-coastal thing or just bi. Hot.
There are a lot of like jokes and like comments in this movie. They come a little later on that like we couldn't make them in a movie today. They're like a little homophobic.
Age like milk type thing.
Some age like milk comments. Yeah. So she shows up at like the play practice or whatever and she slips up. She says to Zach, I saw you in Greece twice. Which
and she's Zach, supposed to be the new girl.
Right. She's supposed to be new. And Zach picks up on it. He mentions it later to Julie. But he's like not having any of her bullshit. And he says to her, sports and drama, it's like plaids and stripes. They don't mix. Which in my experience is actually not true. I had a former student. It's like one of my favorite kids I've ever taught. I taught this kid Hunter, took my drama class for like 2 or 3 years, but he could never be, sorry, I was just cleaning my glasses. He could never be in the school shows because in the fall for the fall play, he was playing football. He was like a really good football player. And then in the spring for the musical, he had like training for football. So he could never be in the shows. But then his senior year, he was able to do the musical because he wasn't training because he was graduating and he was cast as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, cool.
It made me so happy. So sometimes sports and drama do mix, Zach. Around this time, I stopped to wonder where Fern's parents are.
Yes. I wonder, because I'm like, don't they notice their daughter literally changed overnight? Like, has a whole new wardrobe, has like a whole new hairstyle.
Car. She pulls up into school. We see her like making out with some guy to get this like car. And then she pulls into Courtney's parking spot in front of the school.
I know. And like, Courtney is a
bitch.
Yes. And Courtney is not pleased.
No.
But so I love how. Happy. So Courtney compares like Violette and how she's acting with her newfound popularity, new money. It's like when people like are newly rich, like she goes the little whore, she's milking it for all it's worth. And so they hear rock music and like it's coming from outside and they go out there and so Violette
extra.
She's like on the hood of her car, just shaking her head around to the music.
Yeah. And just like rocking out on top of her car. Like she's in a fucking Poison video. I don't know.
And like, all the people around her are like cheering and like, it's so funny. And it really is. And they go, who are you? Angeline? Who's like, I love like an Angeline reference.
Courtney pulls her inside and she's like, what the hell are you doing or whatever? And she goes, I'm doing what you taught me to rule. And Courtney goes, rule, bitch, but don't forget who made you.
I know. She goes, I can't help it if I'm at the mercy of the crowd. They love to hate me. Oh my God. They created a monster.
Yeah.
Like Courtney was not prepared.
No. Courtney tells her, I made you and I can break you just as easily.
But Fern knows that she has all the power and she steps to Courtney just as easily. Good idea. Kill me like you did Liz.
So meanwhile, Julie just comes clean to Zach about everything. I couldn't believe she gave up that information like so easily.
Who else is she going to talk to? Who else she got? How did she
know that he's not going to go to the police? She probably
hopes she wants to go to the police. Yeah, she wants to go to the police. So that's, if anything, she realizes
he's all about Fern being Violet. She tells him what happened with Liz. She goes, do you know Fern Mayo? And he's like, no. So they decide that they need evidence and they go back to the parking lot where they first found the body. And at this point, they've said that it's been a few weeks.
Because they realize the Polaroid is still out there. They never grabbed the camera and the Polaroid.
And they're like looking around the parking lot, which is like crazy. But then we do see that the photo is there. It's in the gutter. They just missed it.
But so they still try to go to the detective and Vera believes the story that Courtney gave her and they have someone in custody.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's where Julie says that Liz was a virgin and I just still like you would have figured that out in the autopsy. Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, back at school, there are posters as there are in these teen movies plastered all over the building with a picture of Fern Mayo that says, "Who is Violet?" And the people are rioting.
They're shook. And this is very reminiscent also of Mean Girls with the burn book.
Yep.
Yeah, that reminded me of that because it's like everywhere. It's like all over the walls and like the windows on the outside.
So Fern literally passes out when she sees this.
This was my least favorite Fern outfit because it's like a pink satin bra with the see-through white blouse and like the satin that did not look good. It wasn't my favorite. And she tries to take down all the posters and like Courtney
screaming at them to like shut up.
Yeah, Courtney comes up. She goes, she's got, like, "It's over, bitch." On her
head now.
She got like knocked out,
and she literally passes out again.
So Julie discovers Fern wrapped in all the posters in the middle of the floor. Where are the teachers?
Where are ever the adults in these movies?
Yeah, there's literally no Miss Sherwood and like the detective are the only two adults.
Talking to her and she's apologizing. Fern is apologizing to Julie. And then like, it's really sad. She goes, "Before all this, I was something. I wasn't much, but I was something." Oh,
I know. She's nobody again.
Somebody says, I don't know what the reference was. I just wrote this down because I was confused. Someone says it's like Terms of Endearment Part 3. Is there a Part 2?
Yes. It's, oh my God. It still has Jack Nicholson and Shirley MacLaine in it. It's, oh my God, this is going to kill me. I got to look it up. It's going to kill me.
Yeah, because I had
no idea. Came out in the 90s. But yeah, she goes, this time the boyfriend's gay and the rest of the cast sucks.
So they're talking and Courtney says, "Life's a bitch, then you die." And Julie goes, "No, honey, you're the bitch." So of course it's prom night because why wouldn't it be?
Wait, is this when they say she's so evil and she's only in high school?
They're in the car and they're talking about like what they're going to do. And Fern goes, "She's so evil and she's only in high school." So they're trying to decide what they're going to do. And Zach goes, "We go to prom." And Julie, like, gets all mad and asks to
be. The Evening Star. The sequel to The Terms of Endearment is The Evening Star from 1996.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry, guys.
I wish the proms in real life had live bands. I feel like they always have cool bands in movies.
I know, and they have the Donnas. That's, like, such a fun band to get.
Well, those parents probably paid for it.
That is a good...
I feel like all the popular kids in this movie look sweaty and gross through, like, a lot of the movie.
I think it's just like very low budget.
Yeah, I guess. I just think they all look gross. So we see Julie and she's in her room and her mom brings her in a bag of things that Liz's mom brought over that she thought that Julie might like to have.
Wait, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't Zach and Julie go to prom together?
Julie didn't want to go to prom.
Oh, okay.
Zach says, like, you know, we could go to prom. And Julie's like, just take me home. She's like offended that he would test it. So she's in a room and her mom brings her in this bag of things that Mrs. Purr brought over. And in the bag is that birthday card. Remember the birthday card that they were opening?
Yes.
And it had,
"I killed Liz. I killed the teen dream. Deal with it."
And we hear Courtney saying it. "I killed Liz. I killed the teen dream. Deal with it."
So Julie immediately springs into action and they almost seemingly right away are perfectly coiffed for prom. Mm-hmm. They have
Yeah, and they have a limo. Yes. They already have, and they have rides. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe they were planning to go to prom initially.
Jack and Julian Fern walk in, and when Julie and Fern walk in together, you hear the popular girls go, I don't want to repeat it. They go, carpet munchers. Like, you can't say so, that.
I know. That's such like a foul way to put it too.
And they make like homophobic comments about Zach too. Like, they're like, oh, they probably couldn't figure out which one was going to get to wear the dress.
Like, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just like immature assholes, basically. Marcy has crimped hair and a boa.
Courtney is wearing this like, I don't know, this like, what's the word I'm looking for? Cleopatra, like style, like headdress in her hair. She comes over and they're talking about,
Did you hear that, like how that came about, the hairstyle? Wow. So apparently when Rebecca Gayhart walked out and like she has flowers in her hair, she thought it looked better. And so Rose McGowan wanted to have something look even better. She wanted to have like a more interesting hairstyle. So they put those in there.
So Marcy is like talking to her date about how she wants to like get out of there. And Courtney's like, you know, you can't leave. They have an announced prom queen. And she's like, oh, you know, I'm sorry, Courtney. And she goes, it's okay, Mars. We can't all be up to speed, can we? And then everyone laughs and we hear someone go, ouch. That wasn't really a great burn.
No, it was not that good. Okay. I liked it better when Eric's sister from that 70s show called Marcy the Queen of the Damned.
Oh, that's Eric's sister from that 70s show. I knew.
Yeah. And the sister from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is in this movie too.
She is. Yeah. Yes. So Dane is prom king. Courtney is prom queen. There's a balloon drop. This is like a huge deal.
Yeah. Zach's roaming around backstage and like doing something.
Yes. We see Zach like up to something.
Wait, Ms. Sherwood calls this the cherry on the cake of a delicious year. Mm. The most popular girl in school died. It's not a delicious year.
I was just thinking, like, you know, Ms. Sherwood hates having to put a crown on Courtney's head.
Oh, it killed her. Yes.
So I also thought it was weird, speaking of the headpiece, that Courtney would wear a dress with a headpiece like that when she was like planning on getting a crown. Like, she fully planned to be prom queen.
Yeah. That,
she would, like, why would she? Her head free.
Because well, we all know where that came from now.
Headdress. So for some reason, Courtney feels like she needs to make a speech, which happens in Mean Girls, actually. But it's like funny because remember, the principal is like, you're really not required to make a speech.
Yes.
So she's making her speech, but it's a good thing she does because Zach has rigged the audio to play the recording from the card. So while she's standing up there, we hear Courtney say, I killed Liz. I killed the teen dream. Deal with it.
And the students like eventually realize it's her voice. Dane like hands her the scepter. He walks away.
She like can't believe it. She's like, Dane. Like she can't believe that he would not want anything to do with her after this gets out.
And it starts to go like a little bit in slow motion. And one of the girls goes, that bitch.
Made me laugh so hard.
And Julie like blows her a kiss.
You'd be ashamed of yourself. Okay.
Yes. Yes, Julie blows her a kiss and like Courtney realizes it like it was her and she's like, eat shit. She like mouths it.
They all start like throwing their corsages at her.
They're screaming, whore, murderer. I like how she like flails about. Like she's like flailing as she's like walking through the crowd. And it's like flowers.
She snaps her picture. We see the picture in the end of their yearbook.
And yeah, she still makes the yearbook.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, and that's the movie.
She, you know, gets what's coming to her.
And they also play the song, like, Young at Heart, too. Like, that, like, old style, which I love that, like, juxtaposition. What do you think happened to Courtney? Oh, let's think about this. We love true crime. What do you think happened to Courtney? Well, think about it. Her, Julie, and Marcy all, like, what's the, like, it's something about handling a corpse. Like, that's a crime.
Yes. Yes.
It's technically desecration of a corpse because they like.
I forget what they like. I'm trying to think of another word, but yeah, the corpse. Obstruction of justice because they lie.
Right.
The police.
Right. Courtney also like.
Involuntary manslaughter, I would guess, because they didn't mean
to. Right. It truly was an accident. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it truly was. But then Courtney also will have the other thing of like the guy that they also, he's going to sue her.
Yep.
He would sue her for, like, because he'd be in jail and, like, his life would be ruined. Because there would always be those theorists being like, maybe he did do it. Like, he was there.
Yeah, maybe that ruined his life no matter what.
Yeah.
Bonkers, yeah.
Julie probably got it off the best.
Because Julie did try to tell the truth. And they just weren't hearing it.
Yeah, so Julie would probably get house arrest.
Yeah, I would assume that the other two got jail time.
Yeah, Marcy wouldn't get as much, but I mean, she pretty much did everything. Well, no, Courtney did a lot more.
I don't understand why Courtney takes the full blame, why she says, I killed Liz. They all kind of did it. I know she's the one who
Well, because they didn't know that she had the jawbreaker. They just thought they were putting tape over her mouth. They didn't realize they were throwing something in her throat. That's why.
Bonkers.
That's why it's a movie.
Yeah. It's a great movie. I enjoyed watching it again. I hadn't seen it in years.
Me either. And they were talking about making it into a TV series on the E! Network.
Really?
Yeah, but it never came about. That was 2 years ago, though, too. It was pretty recent.
What would that have followed? Because, it's about, this one isolated incident.
I don't know, because I don't know if they would just do a... I don't know if they would do, a new story. They would probably start from over. They would probably start from the beginning. The whole, maybe even, first season would lead up to, Liz dying.
Right, maybe we'd get to, know Liz a little bit better.
I guess we would know Liz a little bit better for, maybe the first two episodes. She would die, and then it would be, the big thing, almost a Pretty Little Liars scenario. Because it doesn't have to follow it religiously if it's going to be a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Heather's was a TV series, but I never tried to watch it because I heard it wasn't good.
I've never even seen the movie Heather's.
Oh, it's 1989, so it's a little outside the range, but I still think we should do it because it's a good teen movie.
Yeah, maybe one day.
It's so good. Oh, my Christian Slater's really cute in it.
I do like Christian Slater. Mom, anything else you want to say about this?
I think I got it all. It's just it was fun to relive. I felt like I did not.
It's a good campy movie.
It's very campy. It's very easy to watch to do the notes on since I watched it so many times. It took me only an extra half hour to watch this movie.
I didn't realize how well I would still know this movie. I always knew this was a movie I liked, but I guess I kind of forgot how much I must have watched it because I was surprised at how quickly it all came back.
Yeah, I didn't realize you watched it so much too. I always just think about Isaiah and I were the only ones who knew about this movie.
I also watched it with Isaiah.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm sure we made everybody watch it that we knew. We're it's the best movie.
Yeah.
And it is campy. Even RuPaul's Drag Race, they had at DragCon, they did a screening 3 years ago and Rebecca Gayheart was there.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
So that's truly a cult campy classic of the drag community.
She was married to Charlie Sheen, wasn't she?
No, Rebecca Gayheart was married to McSteamy for a very long time.
Really?
Ooh, you didn't know that she was married to McSteamy?
No.
They only broke up recently, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh my God, they had a fun scandal. They had a scandal where they had, this was back in the day, a celebrity sex tape. You actually had to record it. And so it wasn't just on a video recorder or whatever. So it wasn't just the two of them. It was them and another girl who was Miss USA or a Miss Teen USA type thing. So it was a big scandal. And then that girl, it was Carrie Ann Panache. She ended up on Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew because she had a meth addiction.
Aye.
Yeah. Thanks. Oh, she was a trip. Yeah. Mm. Hopefully you're in a good place now, Carrie Ann. But yeah. So we'll leave you on that.
All right. Well, on that note, this was fun. You can find us on Instagram at Totally Paused Pod and on Twitter at Totally Pause Pod. No D.
I feel if you search I Totally Paused, our usernames are going to come up.
Yes, I would assume so.
Yeah.
You can find me across all social media platforms at Jess Paused Pod.
And you can follow me at Sio Monroe on all platforms. And don't forget to subscribe and rate and review.
But only if you're going to leave us a 5-star rating. If not, keep it to yourself.
Only positivity. Only light and life.
Well,
we're out.